Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in that time of week, the Sooners on SI podcast, episode 283, and it's a cold episode. It's a frozen episode. I'm Ryan Chapman, hanging out here in Moore. I have dodged multiple cars today, unfortunately, trying to get home from radio. John Hoover up in the 918. I hope you've not had to leave compound to Hoover in the last 48.
I took the trash out last night up against the house, didn't drag it to the curb. That's how cold and snowy it is here. There's ice, there's snow and everything. We got 6 inches of snow and 6 degrees. That's a good combination to stay in the house.
Yeah, we did not quite get that on the snow front. We iced over, but I think it ended up being about between half an inch and an inch overnight a little bit. But yeah, it's not good. It's not great. Stay inside if you can. I hope that you're able to stay inside. I hope you have it'll be on the roadways, because I had to call Hoob. We had to delay the recording of today's podcast because I was telling him, I was like, look, man, I'm going at a crawl. The 4Runners and the semis and all that stuff were not. And I quite literally had a wreck in front of me and a wreck behind me. And I was white knuckling just going, I just want a podcast.
I-35 is bad enough on a normal day, isn't it?
Hey, you know what? I'm happy because this is the last time I'll speak to you guys for like 2 weeks. Nothing to do with you guys. I'm so disgusted by the weather. I'm leaving the country. That I booked a flight. I'm leaving the country. I'll be back on the other side. But before we do that, before we truly gear up for spring football and all that fun stuff when I return, boss, we have to close the book on fiscal year 2024, however it's labeled, all that fun stuff. All the records requests have come in, all that. We've gotten the SEC revenue distribution that came out, a number that, as who we'll dive into here in a second, will increase a great deal this time next year when we get that data. We've had the athletic department in the last fiscal year posted a $2.6 million profit. We can dive into some of the breakdowns of that. But, John, it's a really, really interesting time because this comes – the same about 2 week period that we get the books for Oklahoma, we get the SEC announcing their distribution. You have Joe Siglione send out a big email explaining Oklahoma will be opting in to the $20.6 million once the House settlement gets done, which is expected to be done on July 1st. Also, please send us more money because our basketball team sucks and we're going to palm that off on the fans. That's how I read that letter. That might not be the spirit behind it. It's a weird time in college athletics where right now all Oklahoma has to cheer for is a women's basketball team, a gymnastics team, softball, baseball, and the almighty dollar. That's the big trick that, as I know you and I both enjoy the College Football Inquirer, athletic directors have pulled that on people that, hey, look at our profit. We're doing good, guys. Don't mind any of the wins that are not coming on the field.
We're doing good. We've made $200 million, which is more than we've ever made. We got $2.5 million profit. And by the way, here's an email. We need more. We need you to send us more. It's a bad timing. It's a bad look. It's bad optics. What are you going to call it? It's necessary. Joe Castiglione's got to send that email out. Facing Oklahoma and every school that competes on this level coming up. July 1st is a $20.5 million, you mentioned it, revenue share. This is not NIL. This is not donations. This is a revenue share that they're having to spend. They're having to it, in addition to everything they've been spending all these years, they now have to spend, the school, the university, the athletic department has to spend $20.5 million and rising every year, Joe said, on student athletes. They're going to pay the student athletes a share of the revenue share, more than $20 million. It's going to go up every year. It's going to be a major pain in the butt. So yeah, Joe's got his hand out, as every athletic director does at this stage of the game. Well, you mentioned the numbers, and we'll go over them real quick. $208 million in operating revenue, $208.8 million. Operating expenses were $206.1 million. So you got about $2.6 million profit. Wow, that's great, Ryan. You're making 206 million. You're spending 200, or I'm sorry, you're making 208 million. You're spending 206 million. About the same. I went back and looked at some numbers, Ryan. Went back and looked at some numbers. Oh man. Oklahoma does this every year. Since I've been studying this since about 2008, 2009, 2010, Oklahoma has perfected the art of spending just as much as it makes and then spending it as a little bit of a profit. There's a little bit of a profit every year. Whether it, going back to, like I said, 2010, whether it's 41 million in operating expenses and $43 million in revenue, or 51 and 52, or 76 and 77, 95 and 96. Those are numbers, over the years that Oklahoma spends this much and they make this much. Now I want to read something to you. This is from USA Today's 2022-2023 fiscal year. Okay, you're gonna love this. University athletic department operating expenses and revenues. All right. One has operating expenses, the other one has revenues. Okay. They fluctuate, right? Oklahoma in 2022-23 was at $1.7 million. Let's compare Oklahoma to some of their peer institutions, right? Ohio State that year was number one in the nation in revenue. They reported a profit, Ryan, of $26 million. Texas reported a profit of $14 million. Alabama, $18 million. These are peer institutions. These are schools that OU's competing with, right? For national championships, conference championships. Michigan reported $17 million. Georgia, $33 million. Profit, not revenue, profit. LSU, 6.5 million. Okay, it's getting a little more to the norm. Texas A&M, 16 million. Texas A&M spends more than just about anybody. They still reported $16 million in profit. Florida, 16 million. Penn State, 11 million. Auburn, 23 million. Michigan State, 16 million. Here's the big one. Indiana somehow reported $34 million in profit last fiscal year. What? Virginia, 11 million. Florida State, 11 million. I will repeat, Oklahoma's profit for 2022-23, 1.7 million. What are you doing in Norman, Oklahoma? Why are you spending so much and then having to ask your fans for more money? And you're seeing now in 2023-24, you're seeing ticket revenue drop. You're seeing football donations drop by $4 million. You're seeing men's basketball tickets drop. I mean, of the top 21 producing revenue producing schools, revenue, not profit, but revenue producing schools in that fiscal year I was just quoting from USA Today, of the top 21, Oklahoma ranks 20th in the amount of profit, right ahead of Iowa, who reported $151 million in expenses, $151.5 million in revenue, $400,000 profit. Oklahoma's right above them. Everybody else is turning a profit in athletics, and I don't know why this is. I'd like to sit down with Joe Castiglione for about a week, maybe an hour. We can probably get it done in an hour and figure this out. Why Oklahoma continues to spend almost exactly what it makes every year.
And it's not like the results on the field are getting better. We've
No.
well documented the football struggles, and everyone knows this is a massive make or break year. This was the make or break year for men's basketball. It is broken. It might be dead. Literally, the program, jokingly, may have run this program into the ground less than a decade after it making a Final Four appearance. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. You would have thought that this might have been a time of you're reshuffling the deck, but also this momentum of carrying into the SEC. This should have been a okay. Maybe you're not making as much as Alabama or Georgia or your peer institutions in the SEC because those SEC payouts haven't started yet, right? There's a big, the
Right.
gap is pretty decent right now between the SEC and what they were getting in the Big 12. It's going to get a lot bigger. That's why they made that move. Why is Texas, who is in a similar spot? Well, yeah, the donor, okay, is there that much more donor support there than what's Chokes have been doing the last 20 years? I mean, that's supposed to be the biggest thing he does, right, is raise the money and then spend it properly. And it was going well when Bob Stoops was there. Bob Stoops exit stage left. You lose Lincoln Riley, and then suddenly, now the microscope comes out, the big magnifying glass, and you go, "What's going on here with all this revenue?"
I wonder, and I'm serious, I'm asking this question. I'd like to get a magnifying glass, like you said. I'd like to get a team of, let's say, Department of University, not Doge, Department of University Efficiency, right? Dewey. What would that be? Doughy. I don't know.
Dough, dough,
No.
dough. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. I'd like to get some people to come in and look at the numbers and say, you know what? You could slash right here. You could save right here. You could scrimp right here. And all that money that you're saving, that $6 million profit, $7 million, $10 million, $20 million in profit that you would be making on the back end, that can go now to NIL. That can go now to revenue sharing. What a concept. Oklahoma needs to look at the way it spends money up front, okay? Where it puts its expenditures, where it puts bottom line expenses. How much are they spending on this? How much are they spending on that? Where can they cut corners? Where can they reduce? Because they're spending right now. They're spending like Texas A&M, which I don't know if we're comparing apples and apples to apples there or not. But they're spending like Texas A&M. They're only earning like Arkansas. Does that make sense? Like they're spending like they got all this money, and then when they get the revenue, it's actually it's kind of back down here a little bit. There's no profit, so. I know, here's the deal. There's people that are going to say there's no profit in college sports. You don't get into college sports or university, higher education to make a profit. Sure. You bet. 100%. Gotcha. Right? And there's a comparing, using the analogy again, apples to apples. Each school records their expenses and their revenues a little bit differently. Right, a little bit different ledger, a little bit different column, a little bit different row, and whatnot in the expense sheet. There's different state laws across the United States that allow for universities to exempt certain things from declaring them as certain line items in the ledger. So there's little slight differences throughout the comparison that we're making here. But how do you, I mean, $34 million compared to 1.7 million? That's not even close. So I think Oklahoma could go back and look at its expenses and say, maybe we can reduce this here. Maybe we can, after they achieve that, after they lower their expenses across the board, I'm not saying slash jobs or anything like that. Stop planting grass, right? Everybody needs grass on your university. Although they did kind of stop watering it last year. That was weird.
Well, they apparently cut all their
Yeah.
groundskeeping stuff because the field was
Yeah.
off all year long in
Yeah, it was
Norman.
really rough. As you walk across campus, there's dead grass everywhere and patches of muddy stuff, and I don't know. Anyway, there's just little corners, there's just little crevices and pockets here and there that you wonder, could you possibly reduce spending here? And that way you increase your profit margin on the back end, after which you deliver that to your NIL package, your revenue sharing package, and all of a sudden you're more competitive, Ryan, on the football field. Instead of going 6-7, maybe you're going 8-4, maybe you're going 9-3. You know what I mean? You're getting better athletes, you're getting better coaches even. Who knows? You spend more money on coaches. Although it sounds like they've got the coaches they want on the football field, maybe not on the basketball court.
They certainly paid up for that coach on the basketball court. Again, we'll get to that here in a little bit. I think the biggest thing, though, is that if you just win games in football, it cures everything.
Everything.
You know what motivates people to spend money and to help fundraise? By saying, hey, you are in the national, you're in the college football playoff semifinal,
Yep.
and you are a game or two away from winning a national championship, or you win a national championship, people want to, chip money in. Just ask what RG3 did for Floyd Casey Stadium and McLean Stadium, and ask what Johnny Manziel did for another expansion in College Station. Simply Heismans, much less winning games. Also, you know what helps? Getting every single NCAA tournament unit you can possibly get, but you have to be there to make the tournament. And then from there, if you're winning on the football field or whatever, I don't think anyone cares if you post $1 of profit or $10 million of profit. It'll all be fine.
Yeah, and the money is going to be better. You mentioned it. They took a 27. I think their last year, if I'm doing this from memory, so forgive me if I'm just a little bit off, but I think the final year of the Big 12 revenue was down from like 42 million the year before to when they expanded to 14 teams. I think teams made the full share teams made 39 million. So their revenue went from 39 million to this year. We're talking TV rights and conference payout stuff, 27 million, 27 and a half million. That's obviously like a partial share, even a half share from the SEC. They're going to get a full share. It's going to double. Pretty soon it's going to be over 55, 60, 65 million. Media consultants are projecting this, or have projected it, I should say, in the past. I don't know what the current numbers are, but it has been projected at over 70, $80 million. When Oklahoma decided to go to the SEC, there were projections out there that said within 5 years, SEC schools will be making $100 million. Of course, you're going to leave the Big 12 for that. You have to take a little haircut at the front of it, and that's what they did. That's what they've done. So there will be more profit down the road. But the question I would have is this: when that extra next year, 27 million or 29 million, whatever it's going to be, and then 2 years down the road, 5 years down the road, whenever it becomes 70, 75, 80, $100 million, what are your expenses going to look like? Are you going to have a similar, a number commensurate with that? Are you going to say, well, we're projecting $100 million in revenue from just from conference membership, and that's going to be total revenue of a 200, and let's just project $250 million. That means we have to up our spending budget to $250 million. If we can spend $250 million, then we should be able to make $250. If we can make 250, then we should be able to spend. They need to change their thinking in this 21st century of NIL, revenue sharing, cutting costs, scholarships, all this stuff that's going into these expenses. You got expenses? Stop emailing people and saying we need your money. Stop knocking on doors saying we need your money. How about reduce the way you spend money? How about maybe curb your spending? Might be
It's
something to
a
think about for the future.
as the rev share comes in too, NIL is not just going to magically go away. It's just, hey, every school can offer X number of dollars per athlete, per sport, all that stuff. NIL is still going to be a thing as well. So having to find all this money within, then
That's
goes
totally
externally.
external. Yeah, you're talking about profit, or I keep saying profit, revenue sharing. You're talking about $20 million this first year. NIL is over here. NIL is external from that. That has literally nothing to do with it. It's the same purpose. You're still giving the money to the athletes, but it comes from a totally different bank. And so you're right. NIL, make it as big as you can. And it makes you wonder. My wife and I were having this discussion. She's in accounting, and so she's asking me these questions. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know what Alabama does with its $14 million. I don't know what Georgia does with its $33 million. Do they put it in a trust fund? Do they invest it? Do they put it toward the university endowment? I don't know. And what does Oklahoma do with theirs? They invest it back into the athletic department. They invest it back into the student athletes. They hire another associate athletic director. They, expand. They build a new building or whatever. That's a totally different deal. That's bonds and things like that. I know, but.
They need a new basketball arena. You know, that would
New
be
basketball
an
arena. Man.
expenditure that could be in there, you know?
About $200 million for a basketball arena on or near campus. Wouldn't that be fun?
How about $2 million? Just actually tear down the Lenovo Center and make the men's basketball team play outside. That's what they deserve.
Ooh.
They should have to play at the ATO house is what they should have to do. And it might be more of a home court advantage to what they've got going right now. It'll be interesting. That's what this they've been preparing for the SEC. Well, they've fallen flat on their face. The football team was an embarrassment. The basketball team is even more of an embarrassment. And you know what does not mo shame can kind of motivate people, but you know what's not going to motivate donors is why do you need another X number of how many dollars from me to do what exactly? Where is this gone? We've given and given and given for 3 straight years to prepare for the SEC, and all it got us was South Carolina walking in and being up 21 to nothing 3 possessions into the football game. All it got us was LSU, who has also opted out of giving a rip about men's basketball, going on an 8-0 run to close the game and pantsing you and leaving everyone on the Lenovo Center going, what just happened? Like it cuts both ways, and that's the spot that Joe Castiglione and this athletic department are going to find themselves in here over the next 365 days. It's going to be crucial. You're going to have a big make it or break it year in football. You're going to have to make a men's basketball hire. Like there's a bunch that's going to go on, and there's some good in there, right? Like you look at the breakdown. Softball set a new record. It moved to second in the athletic department in ticket sales behind football. Football posted 40.9 million. Softball 2.6 million in ticket sales, 2 million for men's basketball. And you look at it this year, softball in this time frame opened up Love's Field, hosted 23 home games during the regular season, and then a game against Baylor and a game against Tulsa at Hall of Fame Stadium, then 5 postseason games. If this team tracks on what they've done through 10 games, you're going to have 24 games at Love's Field this year during the regular season, 2 games at Devlin Park, 1 Oklahoma State, 1 Mississippi State. So that Mississippi State game certainly, and even a partial share of the OSU ticket haul, going to be a bigger opportunity, you would think, than Tulsa and Baylor. And they could host another 5 postseason games, maybe more at Love's Field. You'd hope not more, but you could host another 5. That season ticket revenue could tick up again, as Patty Gasso talked yesterday about wanting to do their part and things like that. The issue is you're not going to get 2 million in men's basketball. I doubt it. It sounds like the Lloyd Noble Center has been a ghost town, rightly so. So you're going to have to find a way. I would imagine the football revenue probably up this past year with the excitement of the SEC and things like that. But we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what this next 2 to 3 years looks like for OU Athletics as they transition out of the partial share of SEC plus having to the money withheld from Big 12, all that weirdness of the transition here in 3 or 4 years, they'll be fully fine. But we'll also have a better picture of what does NIL plus rev share look like. And that's an area that Oklahoma, I mean, if Joe Castiglione wants a basketball program, if he doesn't want part of his legacy to be you hired Bob Stoops and saved OU football, and on your way out, you killed OU basketball, he's going to have to invest in NIL on the basketball front too.
Yeah, and when you think about the two revenue producing sports, the two revenue producing sports on campus, it's football and it's men's basketball. Football donations, okay, not ticket sales, but just donations was down $4 million, right, to $43 million. So we're talking the previous year, not just this past 12 months, but the previous year, down $4 million fiscal year. Then you've got ticket sales down from ba in basketball down $2 million. So you're and then football ticket sales were also down about $2 million, around $2 million. So you're talking about almost $8 million lost in your two revenue producing sports. So you've got to figure something out on that front. Obviously, you can't go 6-7 every year. You can't go win 30% of it, if that, not even this year, 25% of your conference games in basketball. You're losing money in terms of, like I said, football donations, football ticket sales, men's basketball ticket sales. The Love's Field thing, would you think that that's going to dip a little bit? I mean, this year's team, right, is not last year's team, correct? New faces, bunch of
Different.
freshmen, transfers, trying to figure it out. Patty's coaching again, all that stuff. So they're probably going to lose a few games here and there, probably. In addition to that, the newness of Love's Field probably wear off a little bit. I mean, it's still the best in the country, and don't get me wrong. I'm just saying last year everybody wanted to see it for the first time. This year it's like, hey, yeah, we went last year. So maybe there'll be a little dip there.
I
Here's the
don't
thing.
think so this year because you're
No?
gonna have better series. You don't,
Yeah,
you're not
true.
having to sell Iowa State, right?
That's true.
And
That's true.
also, I know just anecdotally, there's a ton of people who could
SEC,
not
yep.
get into Merida Hines who still could not get into Love's Field last year as well.
Okay.
Like, there might not be as much newness, but I think there's still a lot of people who wanted to go last year,
That's
couldn't.
fair.
And also, if this team's a top five team, it's not last year's squad, but you're gonna have SEC series for a top five. Maybe like 3 years from now, that could be something that's on the table. Maybe not.
I
I
could
don't
see
know if
that.
this year would be the year for that, but at some point newness will wear down. And at some point, maybe not in the near future, every dynasty comes to an end, right?
The thing about softball, and this kind of got me a little bit, bugged my eyes out a little bit on this, when you're talking about money, is that softball made $4.1 million in total revenue last year, 2.6 million in ticket sales, which was an all-time record, of course. But $4.1 million in total revenue. Has any softball team in the country made $4 million in total revenue in college? Surely not, right? This has got to be like the apex of women's softball in college. And when you put the bottom line on it, when you say revenue versus expenses, the program still turned out a minus $3 million. They lost the expenses were $7 million last year, and they only brought in $4 million in revenue. $3 million is what softball cost OU to play last year. That shocks me. I would have thought that OU softball actually turns a profit. It's not even close.
But it shows you how important this is. Why, when we talk revenue sports, it's like softball, that's a huge achievement. If your football and basketball are not successful, your athletic department's not successful.
Right.
No ifs or buts about it. And that's why you can look at softball, you can look at women's gym. The men's and women's tennis teams have been pretty good here the last couple of years. Baseball's gotten a lot better under Skip Johnson than it certainly was under Hughes and all that stuff. None of that matters if Joe Siglio doesn't get football and men's basketball right, and he's got to get it really, really right in the most competitive league in America, in a league in which he has not yet shown the care or want to dedicate what it takes to win in men's basketball, and he's not made the right decision to this point. If Brett Venables rebounds, it could turn out to be the right hire, but through 3 years, it's an
Three failures.
incomplete. But the grade I would give right now is a failing grade, because if we close the book on 3 years, was this a successful hire? I would say no, but that's what year four is for. That's why it's a make or break year for Brett Venables, but his make or break year for basketball has blown up in his face.
And I'll tell you this, you mentioned football and men's basketball, and that's fair because those are the two revenue producing sports. I'll just paint it for you this way. Kansas, in that fiscal year I was talking about, comparing apples to apples, OU to its peer schools in the top 21 revenue producers. Kansas, which is, way down the list in revenue, Kansas made a $10 million profit that year. Kansas basketball is great, we all know, right? 80% of their revenue comes from football. So think about that. It's football and it's men's basketball. It's football and it's men's basketball. Those are the two revenue producing sports. And in basketball, even with as many NCAA tournament units as you can stock up, which Oklahoma, I think, is just now finishing NCAA tournament units from, no, it would be finished by now because Lon didn't go deep into the tournament. But if Lon had made the, say, Sweet 16 in his final year, I think this would be OU's final year to get money from that, because they trickle it down and it just pays out a little bit every year. But yeah, it's basketball's weird the way they turn the money in that into actual revenue.
You know what makes the book simpler on basketball? Missing the tournament 4 straight years. You know how many units they've gotten from Porter Moser?
It's a
That many.
zero.
That many units.
Yes.
About as much pleasure as the fans have gotten from Porter
Yes.
Moser. Before we dive into Porter Moser or bury Porter Moser, football, there are a couple things though. Spring practice, still March 6th. Winter workouts still just undergoing, so it's a lot of weight lifting, a lot of testing. We've seen John Mateer. He throws an excellent t-shirt, and we know he throws an excellent football. That's all we've seen of him thus far. There'll be a little bit more help on board though to hopefully help turn that thing around in the form of a very familiar face, Kevin Wilson. He's gonna go from your neck of the woods back to my neck of the woods, former Tulsa coach, but obviously Indiana. He had stops at Ohio State as an OC, then obviously a big chunk of time at Oklahoma. Kevin Wilson coming to join the staff as an analyst. This is one of those situations where can only be seen as a positive. I don't see how that'd be a negative, really, especially when you talk about two things. One, Brent Venables lost a game management guy, a big piece of that when Matt Wells left for Kansas State a year ago. Kevin Wilson, not only a veteran, but a guy that has had to do all the game management stuff twice as a head coach. And then also, you got a really, really, really young offensive coordinator. It's never a bad thing to have another set of eyeballs on it, especially one that coached for so long at Oklahoma when the Big 12 was very similar to the SEC as far as a ton of talent. Coached for a while at Ohio State, obviously dealt with Big 10 stuff. I can't see how Kevin Wilson hopping aboard could be anything but a positive to help round out Oklahoma's. Is it still technically the support staff? Not that the analyst can coach. It's just the coaching staff, I guess. He can't wear a headset or speak into a headset, but who cares anymore?
I guess it's technically support staff. Didn't Brent just hire in Wes Goodwin? Didn't Brent just hire a guy to be his kind of eyes and ears on the sideline? He worked with Bruce Arians, Wes Goodwin did for the Arizona Cardinals. So he's got that maybe on defense. Maybe he's bringing Kevin Wilson on to help out do that on offense a little bit. I don't know. I have seen this, and I agree with you. I think it's a win-win. I don't think hiring Kevin Wilson as an analyst is in any way, shape, or form a bad thing. But we've seen the reaction from the fans, Ryan. And the reaction is, hey, you're bringing back a program guy. And the other reaction is, oh my God, you're bringing back another program guy, right? I mean, I've seen reaction from fans both ways. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think Kevin's going to be an asset to Brent in a number of arenas there at OU, but I do see people saying he only surrounds himself with familiar. He doesn't maybe he doesn't have the greatest interviewing skills. Maybe he doesn't find certain qualities in coaches, is unable to find certain qualities in coaches that would allow them to be successful beyond what Brent is already familiar with. Brent worked with Kevin, so he knows Kevin, so he understands what Kevin's all about. I don't know if I can fully go down that path of just because Kevin worked with Brent previously, just because Kevin was here previously, just because Kevin is a program guy with Bob Stoops. I don't think that's a bad thing, but I do see the problem that people have with the ongoing continued familiarity, because the bottom line is 6-7 and 6-7 in two of the last 3 years.
Yeah, I'm very sympathetic to that. I think the analyst is actually Bob Stoops' coaching staff dream. He would have just filled it with all the guys that he knew from Youngstown. It would have just been a who's who of him making sure his friends got paid. But the way I look at it this way, though, is regardless, Brent Venables has only worked with who he's worked with, right? If you are your own business owner and you looked at the books really, really tough, and you came with your family and you said, we've got 1 year to really find a way to max this out and to make sure that we are going to find a way to make this thing sustainable. How many like new hires of young hotshot kids that are just out of college are you making versus people that you've maybe been through wars with, that you trust, that you know your business inside and out? Maybe this is a bad example. Maybe it's totally apples to oranges. I am a bit sympathetic toward when you look at knowing it's a make or break year for Brent Venables. He did the outside hire for his offensive coordinator, right? Someone he's never worked with, someone he's never been on a staff with, someone he's never been an analyst with. Brent Venables can't be in every offensive meeting. But he trusts that Kevin Wilson knows what winning football looks like. And while he's going to let Ben Arbuckle do his thing and call his offense and run his offense his own way, I do not blame Brent Venables for saying, you know, my career as a head coach at Oklahoma hinges on how good that guy is in that meeting room. And he needs an analyst to support him. I'm going to give him an analyst that if Kevin Wilson comes to me as Brent Venables and says, two thumbs up, things are going to be good. I trust that Kevin Wilson believes that it's two thumbs up. If Kevin Wilson comes to me and says, the way that you're managing this, it's not how I do it, but it's going to be successful, I go, okay, it's not how. If he comes and says, we might have a problem here, I'm going to call Ben Arbuckle and say, are we going to have a problem? I'm pretty sympathetic to that in a make or break, especially for an analyst role. It's not, he wasn't given a co-offensive coordinator title alongside Ben Arbuckle.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% accurate with that. Evaluating a young, unproven offensive coordinator, checking and balancing, right, is important for someone. I remember Gosh, Josh Heupel, at OSU one time threw it like 13 consecutive plays or something, and Bob went to him at halftime and said, "Hey, we got running backs. Run the football this half." And they ended up running the football because Josh had to be reminded as a young offensive coordinator. Oh crap, yeah, that's right. No, I'm getting tunnel vision and I'm seeing light box and we have to throw and whatever heavy box and we have to throw. So, having Kevin on staff, having an experienced, very experienced play caller, offensive mind, broad picture, big picture, head coach kind of eyes on the thing. Great idea. I really think it's a great idea, and I don't think the simple fact that Kevin coached here previously or Brent knows Kevin, I don't think that's a negative. I think if anything, that's more of a positive because they built up a trust. As one guy was had a fantastic defense in 2000. Sorry, had a fantastic offense in 2008. The other one had a fantastic offense in 2009, right? And they were going back and forth at each other. They were competing against each other in practice, in scrimmages, in preseason, in spring football. So I think they've built up a level of trust where, this is a literally a no lose situation. And Kevin's a fantastic offensive mind. Okay, you go back and look at some of the innovations he's done as an offensive coordinator. Guy's amazing. He's a way better offensive coordinator than he is a head coach.
And again, he's not the co-offensive coordinator, but if you're telling me that one of my big trepidations, we can go back and we can find it and go, man, if I'm Brent Venables and I'm hanging my job on this hire, I'm probably not hiring the 29-year-old that's never touched the SEC and don't know what that looks like. Day one, Kevin Wilson, if he sees something, we know this about Kevin Wilson. He speaks his mind, right? He's not going to pull his punches. He's a pretty candid guy. If he walks in, he's like, hey, man, that jet sweep is going to just get like, you get one elite defensive end that knows how to read it, you're going to be 5 yards in the backfield and it's never going to work. I would trust that guy to say it as opposed to this current coaching staff. I'm not saying they're all yes men, but no one was going to Seth Luttrell, or the message wasn't getting through to say, hey, dog, running straight into the teeth of Tennessee's defense might be a bad idea. Do we think that game plan's going to? I don't feel like Kevin Wilson's going to be pulling any punches for the betterment of like the whole team and the offensive operation and all that stuff.
Hey guys, I got an idea. Here's a play that I think is going to work this week. We're going to run a jet sweep to the tight end, or we're going to run a bubble screen to the tight end, or we're going to run a halfback pass to the tight end with the tight end. Kevin Wilson in that scenario would say, "Have you been drinking? Are you serious? Are you kidding? Because this is a joke, right? You're not going to run this kid that can't make these plays, that can't execute these plays. You're not going to put him on the edge. Come on, Joe John or Seth or whoever was calling these plays at that time. Get serious." And that's what Kevin would be an excellent, excellent resource for checks and balances in, especially in the meeting room and the practice planning.
Now, if they start stalling out in the red zone against Florida, Kevin Wilson maybe has too much influence. You should probably go away the other way.
Or Texas A&M, right?
Hey,
Line
the good
package.
news.
DeMarco Murray and Kevin Wilson in College Station. Let's not go there. Get the
And the
band back
good,
together.
DeMarco's on the sideline, so he can't return that kick against Colorado either. So that's good. That's good too. We just put Brady Trantman in hell. I'm sorry, Brady. Please talk to us still. Appreciate you. One other staffing change that did happen while we were gone last week was sick. Sorry, couldn't really make the podcast happen. JP Losman did depart. He's headed to an on-field role at Washington. Don't think this is a big to-do. Ben Arbuckle brought in his own quarterback coach, basically makes all the sense in the world. I do wonder though, JP's wife had a huge, huge, huge role in the Soul Mission. We've seen a couple of those guys filter in and out through different stuff. I don't know if that means that it's just restructuring. I don't know what that means for that. I'm kind of the opinion, John, that the Soul Mission is something that's great if you don't hear about it a ton. If you're leading with the Soul Mission, then you're probably not winning football games, and that's not a good thing. But as far as the program goes, it is a big thing. It's big in recruiting, all that stuff. So I'm interested to see what kind of changes that has. But I don't know if you've got any thought. I'm not interested in spending like 15 minutes on it, but it
Sure.
is something that JP's wife did have a huge deal in.
Yeah, Zoo Losman was instrumental in the structure of, that Brent Venables wanted of the Soul Mission, and that is talking to recruits, right, over the last couple of years, and how instrumental she was. how important she was in them, the coaches getting to know the families and the families getting to know the other players and the other Soul Mission staffers. It was a big happy family. And that's one of the things that when you ask these recruits, you talk to recruits during the off season or in the spring or whatever. Hey, what'd you like about Oklahoma? Oh man, it's family, family atmosphere, family this, family that. The Soul Mission is amazing. Soul Mission is great. Zoo Losman was really, hooking us up, getting us, in and familiar with and putting the message in front of us. And she was fantastic. So just in terms of, the families moving to Seattle, Washington, I think she's a bigger loss, probably big picture than JP was. They've got their own, they've got several quarterback coaches now, and Arbuckle and what's Kusiewski, John Kusiewski.
Kusiewski,
John.
sorry, I probably butchered
I
that,
butchered that like three times, so my
yeah,
apologies as well.
excuse me
But
for whatever word actually came out.
yeah, he's one of the he's the assistant quarterbacks coach that's going to be doing a lot of work with Metier and Hawkins and those guys moving forward. So, but yeah, just it makes you wonder what the Soul Mission. I mean, I think you said it perfectly. The Soul Mission needs to be a behind the scenes, something that recruits talk about, right? Something that coaches pitch to recruits. But if you're getting up there in front of every press conference after a loss and saying, our Soul Mission is, we got a great Soul Mission. If that's your selling point of the program, then it's exactly what you said, Ryan. It's you probably don't have a great football team on the field. And that's what we've seen the last, two of the last 3 years. We've seen, I'm not going to, call it excuse making or anything like that. I think it's stupid, but I think it's maybe redirecting a little of attention. Hey, we've got some great guys on this team. We got some good citizens. We got some guys that are invested in the family atmosphere. Okay, great. How many games have you won? That's what fans want. That's what fans that are donating, taking money out of their pocket and sending it to OU. That's what they want out of their investment. That's the return they want in their investment, is how many games have you won? Soul Mission, great. Glad there's a bunch of good citizens and choir boys and whatnot on the OU football team. They want some guys that can win some football games too.
Yeah, I think when it was all the genesis of it years and years and years ago, my thought on it was if it could be a recruiting tool and if
Yes.
it could help you win a retention battle, whether that be guys staying an extra year as opposed to going to the NFL, like Clemson had happen on that defense so many times, if you are noticeably losing less guys to poaching in the transfer portal than other stuff, then that's huge. That's great. And you've seen, we hear it about in recruiting. If you hear about it in May and June, that's great because that means we're talking to recruits who have just committed to Oklahoma. You've seen, whether it be a combo of NIL, Love and Life, Soul Mission, all that stuff. You saw like Billy Bowman and Danny Stutzman. They wanted to come back, help you through the SEC. That's great. It's a good thing. It didn't stop Caden Green from leaving your roster and going to Missouri. It didn't stop all these hurt wide receivers from bouncing and transferring, all that stuff. So I would say. The results are, it is what it is. When things are good, people want to stay around. When things are bad, people want to leave. That sounds like every other program in the country to me.
Yeah, that's true.
So we shall see on that front. Like we said, March 6th is when spring practice really gets going fully underway. We'll have all your spring practice coverage. Will I have anything the next week? No, sorry. I'm leaving my laptop in Oklahoma. It's happening. I apologize. When I leave my laptop in Oklahoma, John, I'm going to close it tomorrow. And I'm not going to open it until March 1st. Will Porter Moser be something I'm reading about when I return?
Yes, because he'll still be the head basketball coach at Oklahoma.
Well, that's miserable. I don't want to talk about that. Oklahoma, they're in the midst of a five-game losing streak. Four of those five games have come by double digits. The one that didn't come by double digits was almost the most spectacular one, as Oklahoma is up five with 30 seconds left. And when the buzzer rings in regulation, they're down by three in a loss to LSU, who also sucks at basketball in the Southeastern Conference. I don't know what was more spectacular, being up by seven in Columbia with 2 minutes left and without going to overtime, losing by a touchdown, or being up by five with 30 seconds left and without going to overtime, you've lost by three to LSU.
Yeah, that LSU basketball game, that's pretty special. I mean, in terms of the what had to happen, what had to happen was a 4-point play and a turnover of the inbounds pass. Those are the two things that had to happen, and LSU was 2 for 2. They hit a 4-point play and they didn't really need the 4-point play. They could have hit the 3-pointer and then hit another three pointer after that. And they did both of those, but they got the 4 point play and then turned over the inbounds pass. What? In 20 seconds that happened? Yeah, in 20 seconds that happened. They're not competitive in four of their last five games, and they somehow choked up a 5 point lead in the final seconds against what was essentially a last place SEC team in LSU. Last place. And, you listen to Porter after the game, and what does he say about those two plays? He says, well, we told them this week in practice, we talked to him on the sideline, and we told them this is a do not jump situation. Do not jump. Do not jump at a pass. Do not jump at a shot fake or anything like that. And what does Jalen Moore do? He jumps right into the guy, fouls the 3 point shooter. The 3 point shooter who hadn't missed all night, certainly in the second half. And then Porter also says they practice the inbounds play and they have guys crisscrossing or getting out wide. And you got three options. You got here, here, or here. And they get the ball inbounds and the guy just freezes. And it's Jalen Moore again. He just freezes. Did something completely different than what they practiced. So I ask you, Ryan, is that on the players? Sure. Yeah, I think it is. Is it on the coach? Hell yeah, obviously. If your message is not being received, if you're telling them to do one thing and they're doing something completely else, their me the mess your message is not being received by the players. Is it on the Lloyd Noble Center? No, not necessarily. Not in this case. Certainly not in this case of this particular loss. Some of what's happened over the past 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 12, 15 years is on the Lloyd Noble Center as a building, as a venue, as a college basketball venue. Nobody wants to play in that thing. Let's be honest. Blake Griffin probably looks back and goes, ugh. Buddy Hield probably loved it because, humble beginnings and whatnot. But Trae Young, he spent 1 year in there. He probably hated it. I mean, how much of this is on actual OU basketball fans? We saw the Dari Nokia thing where he's saying OU basketball fans got to be better. Yeah, okay, sure. Here's what I remember about that. Back when I covered a lot of basketball, 2015, 16, was it? The Final Four year. Buddy Hield, National Player of the Year. You've got a senior-laden team that has been there for 3, 4 years, right? Even one guy was there for 5 years. Everybody knows those players. Everybody loves them. They're all fantastic, all the starters. Buddy Hield, National Player of the Year. Final Four team, Hall of Fame coach, Lon Kruger. I go to the Texas game, and it's about 75, 80% full. For the Texas game. And Texas was really good. And I'm like, these fans are really disappointed. And that's, unfortunately, that's part and parcel of being a fan of OU basketball, is that the building is no fun to be in. Even when the team is good, it might not be the most amazing product. It was just, that shocked me. Back here, we're talking almost 10 years ago now. I'm still referring to that, but that was the case. And when you're whatever the record is now for Porter, he's 23-43 in conference play in his 4 seasons at OU. You think the fans are gonna who didn't show up for Buddy Hield to play against Texas for a Final Four team? You think those fans are suddenly gonna say, "Come on, guys, let's go support Porter Moser." Yeah, Porter's. I mean, not when you're 23-43 in conference play in 4 years at OU so far. It's got to be over for Porter. I mean, he's a part of a bigger problem. And I don't know how to quantify that. I've never really. Let's ask Kelvin Sampson. Let's get Kelvin Sampson to talk about OU basketball. All that dude did was win. He did it in a classy way for the most part. Nobody had any complaints. He played hard-nosed blue-collar defense. His teams were not necessarily fun to watch, like good basketball, but God, they won games. And people didn't go. And so he looked at that and said, screw you guys, I'm going to a blue blood up in Indiana. How did that happen for Oklahoma? That should have never happened because the university doesn't invest in the basketball program and the fans aren't emotionally invested like they are in the football team. Poor Kelvin. I always felt bad for him. He occasionally would let slip something like we're a football school with a basketball problem or something like that. Stuff like that on the side. I always felt bad that the fans didn't support him and his program a little better. And here we are in 2025, and it's serious business, big money business, and your head basketball coach is winning 35% of his conference games. Can't sustain that.
It's So much to cover with basketball, too. First off, Kelvin also sent a couple of text messages, which helped his way out the door.
Couple, yep.
Now, it's something so quaint these days.
I
It's
know.
a
Ridiculous.
couple, what Kelvin got in trouble for then would be like, wait, what? You want me to do what now? But you look at it, first off, on Dari stuff, and to blame the fans is the most ridiculous thing I probably ever heard. And I know that
It
Dari's no
is.
you guy, and he's
Yeah.
tired of getting clowned around SEC Network Studios because everyone's making fun of him. Not to bring personal stuff out, but Hoop, you took Mrs. Hoover to the Paycom Center when Chet came back into play, right? You guys have a good night out there at the Paycom Center, enjoying watching the Thunder.
Great night. Great. Lots of fun. Lots of engagement. The team was winning. The team plays good basketball. Not just winning basketball, but good basketball.
That is just by record tied for the best team in the world right now. They play 20 minutes away from the Lloyd Noble Center, give or take, depending on traffic. Other stuff too. I know exactly how long Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be in Oklahoma City because he has a contract that says he's going to be here for this long, and then Sam Presti is going to extend that contract, and he's going to be there for years after that. It would be a Luka Doncic thing for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to not be there. Jeremiah Fears is your best OU basketball player, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be gone at the end of this year, whether it's to the NBA draft or another school or whatever. So to put this on the fans when you're in year four of Porter Moser embarrassing your program every time he plays a big game is frustration, and I understand where the frustration comes from. It's not reality, and that's not why OU basketball sucks. When you look at it, though, like Porter Moser has to be fired. He has to go. It's done, and I think he will be. I think they're just waiting till the end of the season. You can go back and forth. We can do the pros and cons of is it more beneficial to fire him now or 5 games from now? Candidly, I don't quite think it matters. Porter Moser gonna go because this team's not gonna win any of these games left. And if they do, it'll be a Herculean, oh my God, they hit 15 threes. My question is, how appealing is this job at this point? Your facilities, like the Griffin Performance Center, great. Your locker room's great. The second they step onto the floor, you're never going to have atmosphere in the Lloyd Noble Center. It's a problem that's been an issue. John, I am 28 years old. My parents took me to OU games. They were season ticket holders for Kelvin. I was miserable going to the Lloyd Noble Center at 5 because I thought it was like this gross, disgusting building, and it's only gotten older since then. And you're at the bottom or near the bottom of the SEC as far as NIL support. So to sell a coach, like pick your favorite McMajor coach or pick Will Wade, who had success at LSU and
Krzyzewski
he
going to come
got in
out of
trouble.
retirement?
Yeah. To pick whoever. You could get the most ultimate competitor in the world who says, I want to coach in the best conference in basketball. I want to take on the SEC slate. And then Joe said going to show him the NIL budget. He said, I'm going to coach with one hand tied behind my back, and then I don't really have a fan base or an arena to recruit to. So now I have two hands tied. Actually, I'm just going to stay here for another year or take the Indiana job. Like, the Indiana job's going to be like, I don't know. That's where I think that there are a bunch of issues. Behind the scenes support is a huge issue. I can tell you right now, one thing I know 100%, Porter Moser under these circumstances can't get it done. He cannot, and he should not get to continue, and he will not get to continue. That is as good as, I mean, jokes of the old notes. He can look around in the Lloyd Noble Center and go, oh, nobody's showing up for this LSU game. Maybe my coach sucks. And so he's going to get fired. I just don't know if this is a hire away because the move I think that would make the fans most excited is to get a Kellen Sampson, Hollis Price, whatever version of that. Okay, well, that gets you through an offseason. Those guys could be awesome. Those guys also haven't coached before, and I think this is the hardest time in athletics across the board to take a shot on an assistant who's never coached before because you don't know how they can operate everything that goes into the NIL, all that stuff. You look at like Jerome Tang, it goes really, really well 1 year, and then the next year you're totally done. And then this year they're having to like win six straight to even be on the bubble. Like, I think that's a really, really risky spot to be in. And if you get this hire wrong, the program might be dead. Like, I don't think that's an exaggeration. It could just be dead, dead.
Yeah, bottom third of the SEC every year, kind of dead. Yeah. And here's the deal. If you change the coach right now or at the end of the season, is that going to fix everything? Of course not. No, it's going to fix the coach. The new coach, whoever it is, like you said, Krzyzewski or whoever, That's a stupid pipe dream, of course. I'm just saying the most successful name in the history of the game. If he wanted to coach again, would you have a shot at him? No, of course not. But if he did come back, would he be the end all be all? Would he fix everything? He would fix a lot. But even just any coach, I mean, not the best coach of all time, just any coach is not going to fix what everything that's wrong with Oklahoma. Okay, let's get a new coach and put him in a brand new arena. Okay, you've really addressed probably 80% of your problem right there, 70% of your problem, right? Fan engagement, fan interaction, fan passion. You start winning games again, and here's the deal. Here's what we've seen from Lon's teams a little bit toward the end and Porter's team. So the last, what would you say, six years, 7 years for OU basketball? Win at a pretty good pace, lose a little bit. Win at a pretty good pace, lose a little bit. And it's been that way for a solid, ever since the Final Four team. How's a fan base supposed to get fired up about that? The fan base did, and I always thought Kelvin undersold OU fans a little bit. He wanted the same passion at basketball that football produced. That's asking too much. That's not realistic. To have more of the Billy Ball stuff from back in the 80s and 90s, incredible. Guess what? Billy Tubbs' teams did. They won. They played beautiful basketball. They blew people out and they entertained the fans year after year after year. They didn't do it a little bit and then backslide, do a little bit and backslide. That's what we've seen with OU basketball. They've got to get somebody in here and get in an arena where they can generate year after year after year of success. And I think the fans will be right on board like they were with Billy and in some of the stretch of the Kelvin years. And if Kelvin had played better, maybe not better basketball, if Kelvin had played more beautiful basketball, right? I mean, I can remember covering an Oklahoma State game where the final score is 48-46. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to
Yeah,
see
well, for a while there, you had Sutton and Tubbs were like the antithesis of each other, right? One built on defense, the other said, "You put me to sleep," and it was almost like a running joke between the two. You know what I mean? But what's the score of the OU game?
I think it's possible to re-engage the fans, but to do that, you're going to have to win a lot at a high pace and play good-looking basketball for a number of years in a row. You can't just expect, oh, well, we've got a Final Four team like Lon did in 2015, 2016. We've got a Final Four team. We've got a senior-laden team. We've got a National Player of the Year. Okay, what are we going to have next year? Because remember the drop-off? It was pretty dramatic. It was pretty precipitous. So it's like,
It was the only year outside of year one that he missed the tournament
yes. So that
for
was
long.
that's something that just in terms of sustaining, you're going to have to catch lightning in a bottle. And Billy Tubbs was lightning in a bottle. Kelvin, to a large degree, was lightning in a bottle. Lon wasn't necessarily lightning in a bottle, and certainly Porter Moser, no chance.
It's kind of like incredible though. We know that like that's a possibility. Jokes of the own in the same month hired Porter Moser and Ginny Baranchek, who are about as different. Like, take the results off the board, just basketball philosophy. It's about as different as it goes. So we'll see. If for what it's worth, if we're into name season, I don't really know how to put together a list for basketball. It's a little bit outside of my realm. I don't watch much college basketball. That's not what I'm contracted to cover. I much prefer the NBA. But if I were picking one, the name I would go after, and I don't know if he would have any interest in coming to this part of the country where he's never worked before. The current VCU coach, Ryan Odom, he burst onto the scene at UMBC. That was the UMBC team that beat Virginia. He's done a pretty good job here at VCU the last 2 years, and they are consistently one of the top offenses in KenPom. They play a pretty fun brand of basketball. It's not the exact same as like what Pope brought to BYU and then over to Kentucky, stuff like that, but that would be the person that I would enjoy going. I think it's one of those any NIL budget is bigger than probably what VCU's rocking with. I don't know if any of that, but if we're in name season, that would be Ryan's name. But I don't. You should call Will Wade. You should make Will Wade tell you no. Will Wade got in trouble for doing NIL before NIL was allowed. I don't know if Jokes of the Own will call Will Wade because Jokes of the Own doesn't call anyone that has ever once pretended to step outside the lines. No matter, the NCAA doesn't enforce anything anymore. Who cares? Hire the biggest scumbag. If they win basketball games, then they win basketball games. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't Listen, I was covering OU on a daily, everyday in Norman beat basis when Rhett Bomar stepped out of bounds and, sullied Bob Stoops's reputation. Just, I mean, Stoops, I told him this before and I wrote columns. Stoops always did it the right way. He never crossed the NCAA boundaries. He never broke the rules. The one time it happened, he immediately kicked the guy off the school, off the team. But there was this from compliance and from David Boren and from Joe Castiglione, there was this overreaction to, well, we can't break NCAA rules. We cannot break NCAA rules. We have to do it the right way. We're Oklahoma. Oklahoma's had decades and generations of breaking the rules or skirting the rules, or Coach Switzer and Coach Wilkinson had a couple of run-ins. Well, we're not going to do that here at Oklahoma in the 2000s and the 2010s. They kind of went overboard. They created their own compliance department that was separate. It was under the president's umbrella instead of the athletic department's umbrella. They removed it and they got real, real, real anal about compliance. And I think it set them back in terms of what we're looking at in 2020. Listen, everybody wants to play by the rules, but everybody also wants everybody else to play by the rules. Okay. So, but if nobody else is playing by the rules, what's the point? Why are you playing by the rules? Why are you the only ones playing by the rules? And guess what? The NCAA now says there are no rules. There are no rules. You can do anything you want, and nobody's going to punish you for it. So that's been the part that's really, I don't know, just it's confusing. It's aggravating to see, this adherence to we have to be above board. There is no board.
Just
Everybody,
sue. Just sue.
it's a free for all. And I just take advantage of it,
The
I
only
mean,
group of people who have been
when I talk
worse. Listen.
when I talked to Switzer last summer, I asked him, I said, are you gonna be competitive in the SEC? It was the July 1st thing. He said, well, John, they're gonna have to improve their NIL. I said, yeah. He goes, you know what NIL stands for now? And I said, what's that? He goes, now it's legal. Like, we used to do this, but now it's legal, and they call it NIL. We used to do
Yeah.
these same damn things is the way he was phrasing it. And Oklahoma just, Joe Castiglione and Joe Harris and whatnot, ever since the Boren era, just been like, no, we don't want to go down that path. Well, actually, you kind of do.
Only people who have a worse record against the SEC than Porter Moser and Brent Venables are NCAA lawyers. So maybe get after them. Let's get on to rosier things here on our way out the door. Women's basketball. Sunday, you had the first NCAA committee release their top 16. Jeannie Bronchek's women were 15 out of 16. That would mean they'd be a top four seed. They would host the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. That is good news. They had kind of a tough shooting start against Missouri. They were talking about the broadcast that for whatever reason, they weren't able to get over to Columbia for a shoot around on Saturday night. So they had to do that in St. Louis. Got that shoot around in the first half and then got better and better and better. Reagan Beers turned to the lineup. All good there. See, guys, you can win in Columbia. It is allowed. Take notes, Porter and Brent. I guess Porter, do whatever you want. You're not going to need those notes ever again. They got Vanderbilt on Thursday. The Sooner women do that Vanderbilt game, and then Alabama, which I believe is the regular season finale. Those are the two big ones left. Vandy coming in. Wilkes has scored, dropped a 50 burger twice. She only went to the line 24 times against Ole Miss in their last outing, that overtime win for the Commodores. So that needs to be a win there for Oklahoma. But the big question with the Sooner women is, hey, with all of the times that they played top 12 teams but not come out with the win, whether that be South Carolina, LSU, Texas, Duke, Kentucky, that is not hurting them right now in the eyes of the committee, which is good news. So we'll see if that means a return to the NCAA tournament to Norman for the first time in a couple of years, as they've spent the last 2 years as a five seed. That'll roll on. On the baseball side of things, John, they had a perfect weekend to start. Three victories over Lehigh. Their midweek game that would have been today against UT Arlington was banged for weather, but they're headed down to Round Rock this week, and it feels like this is the weekend to see. It's early, but a couple of top 15 opponents down there in Round Rock should be really, really intriguing to see what the level this new look Skip Johnson crew is. How much damage can that starting rotation do this weekend? Should be a good early precursor as the offense had no trouble getting online against Lehigh, but going to face a little bit better pitching this weekend in Round Rock.
Yeah, they're going to face better pitching. They're going to face better hitting than Lehigh. What I liked about I watched all three games last week on the baseball side, and obviously Oklahoma is going to be able to score some runs. They've got so much talent at the plate again, 1 through 9, and they've got some guys coming off the bench that are just like, why is he on the bench? You know, because he's so good offensively, swinging the bat. They've got some dudes just like last year, and a bunch of dudes back from last year that are just extremely talented with the bat in their hand. What I like about OU this year, they seem to, I know it's early and I know it was Lehigh, 1 weekend against Lehigh, so don't get too excited, but they seem to have three arms in that starting rotation, two Witherspoon brothers and Cameron Johnson. Cameron Johnson, 6 foot 5, 6'6", 250-pound left-hander, started his career at LSU, was the number two left-handed prospect in the country as a high school pitcher. Started his career at LSU, had a little control problems, couldn't get the ball over the plate all the time. I think he had 12 in something like 13 innings. He had 12 strikeouts and 16 walks. That's going the wrong direction there. And then we saw him pitching the other day. He had 5 walks and 3 strikeouts. So a little bit better control. They're going to need him to dial that in. That's what Skip Johnson does. Skip is a pitching guru. He's a pitching coach at heart. So he's going to be able to hopefully rein that in. Cameron Johnson, extremely talented. He's the kind of guy that when you look at him and you watch him throw, you know, first pitch out of the game is 97, second pitch is 99. You're like, that guy could be a first round, not just a first round pick, but a very high first round pick. You team him with Kyson Witherspoon and Malachi Witherspoon. All three of those guys went 5 innings in their start, coasted, didn't have any real problems. Again, Johnson with the control, but you know, they'll figure that out. But those three guys give them three legit starters, Friday, Saturday, Sunday starters in the SEC. That's going to allow Skip and those guys with the offensive numbers that they're putting up, it's going to allow them to compete in the SEC this year.
Yeah, and like you said, you expect that control to get better and better for Cam Johnson. Also, add a couple extra arms into the pen. It feels like last year there were times where they went into the pen, especially as we were there at regionals, and you got late against UConn and go, okay, you're really gonna bring this guy out. Feels like it should be a little bit smoothed over. So more than anything, I think it gives this offense some of those new pieces very, very good week in one. They struggle early with some of the better pitching in Round Rock or certainly SEC play. Feel like they'll have more of a leash to work their way into the game, work their way into those series with what they've got at the top end. So that should be good there. Then more good down in Waco as Oklahoma softball rolled through, and Patty Gasso has promised us a new look Oklahoma softball team, and she lied. Because Oklahoma went down and got 4 run rules in 4 games. They were hitting bombs. They were absolutely smothering people. And I texted you multiple times, was like, John, this is a very, I've covered this team before. This team is the kind of team that plays Texas for a national championship. Obviously, super early, but what do you want? You want 9 of 12 with 6 RBIs and 2 home runs from Ella Parker, who's now getting the aloe treatment a little bit from Hofstra. Patty Gasso said that she is giving off aloe vibes at the plate right now. That was a paraphrase of what she said on Tuesday. You want a freshman, Sydney Barker, who got a total snub from SEC Freshman of the Week, by the way. They give co-players of the week and co-pitchers of the week, yet Barker goes 5 for 10 at the plate with 10 RBIs and 2 home runs. She's either hit doubles, triples, or home runs. She will not stop on first base. It's not permitted. You want that? You want another perfect game from Sam Landry, who, by the way, pitched for Louisiana against Baylor in regional play last year. Saw him 3 times, went 1 and 2 against him, and threw 15 up, 15 down, 8 strikeouts. The other 7 outs did not leave the infield. John, if this is week 2, Oklahoma, did not think that they were going to miss Oklahoma City by any means or anything like that. If that's week 2, Oklahoma, Mike White's going to be pissed off again come like June 3rd or June 4th, because that Oklahoma team, if that's scratching the surface. We saw San Diego State, by the way. San Diego State went down to St. Pete Clearwater and knocked off Alabama, knocked off Missouri, a couple ranked wins. That's a good San Diego State team that Oklahoma beat in extras. I know that this schedule, John's not what it's been the first 2 weeks, but this team looks very familiar to what I've covered, which is 4 straight national champions.
If Mike White is mad about Oklahoma being basically the home team of the College World Series, Mike White, who's from New Zealand, think of how mad he's going to be when Oklahoma and Patty Gasso is the home team for the World Series and the Olympics playing in Oklahoma City in 2028 summer. He's going to be steaming, and we'll be there to cover it all. I got a question for you. How hard does Sam Landry throw? Do we know yet?
She was hitting the unofficial gun 70-71.
Okay, that's exactly what I was going to say. I told my wife, I said, that
Unofficial
looks like
gun is
68 to
what
70 to me, but there were times when it seemed like it might have been more than 70.
Nelly McEnroe Marinos told us on Tuesday, that the unofficial gun, she was touching 70 at times. She can
She's
shove.
bringing it.
Peyton Monticelli can shove, and she does in one or two batter increments. But I think the most positive thing, John, about this pitching staff, such a storyline last year was Nicole May could come out of the pen. Kiersten Diehl had to start. She was a different pitcher from the start or coming out. You've seen Isabella Smith come out of the pen and shut the door. You've seen Audrey Lowry come out of the pen and shut the door. Sam Landry basically said, yeah, I prefer starting, but I was used in any relief instance ever at Louisiana was an innings eater. I don't think they're going to have that issue. There's a long way to go. We'll see. I don't know how much they're going to get tested this week on the adjusted schedule out at Love's Field, but again, this is far ahead of where I thought this team was going to be in weekend two. And I think Patty Gasso was almost kind of like, well, shoot, guys. I tried to hold this team down and I can't. I refuse.
Imagine how good they're going to be when they actually take to the coaching that they're getting now for the first time. It's a bunch of youngsters and transfers. You know, there's a transition period. Patty said, I actually get to coach this year. At some point, the coaching is going to take hold and the team's going to get really good. How good can they be?
Kind of incredible. And to think, Sydney Sanders has been much more consistent. She's always been a heavy hitter if it drops, a ton of walks, but it looks like she's a little bit different this year. Cassie Pickering's been excellent. Alana Agbayani came along a lot more this weekend as opposed to weekend one. It really feels like Oklahoma's in a very, very comfortable place. I would classify them as 2 or 3 weeks ahead of schedule for as far as that growth process, which is bad news for everybody else. They're now Texas and Oklahoma, depending on what poll you look at, are consensus one and two, as Florida had some trouble this past week, but should be a lot of fun. We'll be back at it. Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com is your one-stop shop for everything. Just because I'm leaving doesn't mean we're going to stop covering softball. You know better than that. Hit the softball tab. It'll be up there all weekend. Same with baseballs. They're down in Round Rock. I mean, if you're a sicko and want to read about men's basketball, we have it. Read about the coaching change. We'll have a hot board up at some point. Whenever that becomes a fit, do I have to put all that stuff at some point? Blah, 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 blah. We all know where this is going. All right. Women's basketball, same deal. Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com. If you're going, man, I haven't bookmarked it yet because I don't listen to Ryan and I tune him out, which is fine. Everybody does. Just follow us at Sooners on SI on X, at Johnny Hoover, at underscore Ryan Chapman. That account will go dormant for like a week unless you want some soccer coverage. But at Johnny Hoover, at Sooners on SI is the place to be.
You need to stay off social media when you're abroad, my man.
I told you, you're gonna
It's
get
dangerous
probably like
stuff.
you're gonna get like four posts, and it's all either gonna be pictures of Stamford Bridge from the inside, pictures of Aston Villa, and you might get some Big Ben in your life. But other than that, I don't know. I told you this. I am not taking my laptop on vacation, John. It's the first time I've left my laptop like away from me in like 5 years. Probably since like taking this job, I take my laptop every. Like, you don't tell me to. I'm a sicko. I'm paranoid.
Say I'm sorry.
This time I told you, I was like, hey, I'm only taking the iPad and I'm sorry, I'm not opening it up. You guys have been for yourselves.
Totally fair. I went to Alaska for 28 days last year, remember? And there were stretches of 4 or 5 days where I didn't even know where my laptop was, much less have it open. So.
Which reminds me, be sure you check OSCN on Thursday when I fly out, because that apparently is the time for that. All right, that'll do it for the Sooners on SI podcast. Candidly, I don't know if who's going to podcast next week. I'm not going to be here. Worst case scenario,
it might just be me talking for an hour and a half.
Worst case, which is funny, if you live next to Hoove, you can just hear him when he's out in the hot tub at night. That's kind of, he just talks to himself. It's a great podcast. Worst case scenario, we'll regroup back in 2 weeks. We'll preview opening up spring football, a ton to get to from softball, baseball, all that fun stuff. Until then, though, and be smart on the roads, please, and enjoy when it warms up. We'll talk to you guys in a couple weeks here on the Sooners on SI Podcast. We'll see you.